The next speaker is Dr. Mary Lynn Johnson. We'll take a break after you, Mary Lynn, so if you don't mind. Mary Lynn Johnson was special assistant in the president's office at the University of Iowa. She is the author of numerous articles about Blake's poetry and design, and she is the co-author of Blake's Four Zoas, The Design of a Dream. She is also the co-editor, and I'm sure many of you own this edition, of the Norton Critical Edition of Blake's Poetry and Designs, which has gone into several editions, and it's a wonderful edition. And I'm delighted to welcome Mary Lynn Johnson today. Please give her a warm welcome.
Wonder what this would have been like without it.
And then I wanted to have the arrows.
So short a time, and maybe stop when I need to plug something in. The more I study Blake's biblical watercolors, the illustrations of the Bible for butts, the more I want to know about the patron who chose and commissioned the subjects. But how dare I aspire to the evidentiary standard set by G.E. Bentley Jr., whose stupendous body of work we're celebrating today. The internet keeps spewing out so much miscellaneous scuttlebutt that I lose all sense of proportion, relevance to Blake's studies, and expository traction. Last fall, the amazing Karen Mulhone graciously accommodated my over-deadline editions of late-breaking Buttsiana while she was heroically running Blake and our time down the fast track toward today's launch party. Having deposited that stash of odd facts about Butts' Methodist ancestry, his wife's family's trade in the decorative arts, and his relationship to his architect cousin, I'm turning this morning from ancestors to descendants and from the formation of the Butts collection to its dispersal. Maybe I could plug mine into Joe's laptop, and then I could really see. No, that is, yeah, that one is. Anyway, through the two grandchildren, Captain Frederick John Butts and his sister Mary Ann Blanche Butts, the son and daughter of Thomas Butts Jr. Before Joseph Viscomi got on the case in the middle 1990s, it was broadly assumed that much of the Butts collection had passed smoothly from father to son, and I will need MLG Toronto. And then the images, yeah, and just start on that one. Thank you. All right, and then I'll... that's what I'm going to use. If I can find where to run it around. Can get it, get my arrow. Okay, and then which one do... Is it this one?
Yeah, that's next.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, it used to be assumed that the collection passed down smoothly from father to son and from son to grandson, from the patron who died in 1845 to his only surviving son, Thomas Butts Jr., who died in 1862, and then to Butts Jr.'s son, Captain Butts, who died in 1905. As Viscomi notes, the young Thomas Butts Jr. Bequeathed what remained of his pictures, whether framed or unframed, this is the wording of the will, to his son and daughter, much wishing for an amicable partition of the same, not to be sold, but to be retained in affectionate remembrance of me, by whom they are prized by reason of family or recollections. As co-heir, the captain seems to have kept his part of the Blake collection together until his auction in 1903, when he sold a few pieces but found no takers for others. He later sold three Blakes privately to the artist W. Graham Robertson, and his widow sold the rest to Robertson in 1906, except for the three miniature portraits that stayed in the family till 1932. Viscomi's Blake in the Marketplace, 1852, and related Blake quarterly articles uncovered complications in earlier accounts of the dispersal and a wealth of new information about Butts's large extended family, his first and second wives, and likely points in the family history that may have allowed others to acquire Blake's work before 1852, and I've just added a few other people to the family. Uncertainties remain about what exactly Captain Butts's sister inherited and when the siblings divided their legacy. Inferential evidence about the captain's part of the Butts collection rests mainly on William Michael Rossetti's pioneering 1863 catalog in the Gilchrist biography and subsequent sale catalogs, supplemented by recollections of the captain's daughter, the novelist Mary Butts. In the Crystal Cabinet, she records her fascination with Blake's art and her grief when her mother sold it all to pay the death duties. She refers repeatedly to the Blake Room, an addition to the family home constructed especially to house her father's collection, one of these wings. Works that she mentions by name or by subject are easily correlated with sales records, but there's no comprehensive contemporary account of all the Blakes in her father's collection. Now a small, previously unknown item of primary documentary evidence is turned up, a catalog of some of Blake's pictures at the Salters. This undated little flyer, folded in half where the seam is, you see, and stuck in an unrelated book, was among the Mary Butts papers acquired in 2005 from the novelist's daughter, Camilla Bagg, for the Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library of Yale University. This little slip, hardly bigger than a dance card, only about 5.5 to 6.5 inches, or 3/4 inches, or 14 by 7 centimeters, is not a catalog, but merely a numbered hand list with cross-references to Rossetti's catalog. If these are only some of Blake's pictures at the Salterns, why not some of his output? What's missing? Even in this limited format, there's room for a longer list. The title page and the two interior pages take up only 3 of the 4 available surfaces. Why not put the other titles on the back? What's the purpose of this list, and when was it printed? It's keyed to the original 1863 edition of Rossetti's catalog in the Gilchrist biography. Does that imply a production date before 1880, when the second edition came out? We have a reasonably good idea of what remained of the Butts collection in early 1863, when Captain Butts gave the Rossetti brothers their first look at what his recently deceased father had owned at the time of his death on December 14, 1862. As Joe points out in Marketplace, the Rossetti's visit took place in January, near the time of Mary Ann Blanche Butts's wedding to Ensign George Edward Graham Foster Pigott, on January 17, 1863. As Viscomi notes, Thomas Jr.'s will was not probated until February 17th, so the collection was still under one roof. Whether the Rossettis visited on January 15th, as Joseph Viscomi first thought, or on January 22nd, as we now believe, the proximity of the visit to the wedding and to the probate hearing takes on added interest under the terms of Thomas Jr.'s will, which appoints 3 executors who are also to serve as trustees of the income from the residuary estate. These 3 are the widow Mary Ann, a clergyman named William Thomas Beckett, and a son, Captain Butts. After other provisions, all remaining assets are to be divided into two equal moieties or half parts and held in trust as a source of income for the brother and sister and for their heirs after their deaths. The will further states that because the father has already made extra provisions for his son to a large amount, Frederick must bring into the will, bring in what the will calls hotchpot, the sums of £1,000 and £750, being together the total sum of £1,750 before the sum is calculated and the trust is established. The will signed on August 25, 1862, 4 months before Thomas Jr. died, also states that his daughter's half of the trust income is to begin, quote, from the day when she shall attain the age of 21 years or marry under that age, with a consent in writing of my trustee or trustees. The loving and fair-minded father's intentions are clear enough, but in naming Captain Butts as both an heir and as one of his executors and trustees, Butts Jr. set up an innate conflict of interest. As things turned out, the faintly Dickensian administration of the will dragged out to 1877 and even to 1905, the year Captain Butts died. On February 17, 1863, the probate court duly and expeditiously approved the will and granted action to the executors, giving them authority to proceed. But on April 9th, Captain Butts filed a bill of complaint in the Court of Chancery, an alternative to the common law court system, naming his mother and Reverend Beckett as defendants. His complaint, shown here in a later printed record, comes down to two issues, points 4 and 6 on the screen. So let's skip to item 6. Since the death of the testator, his daughter, who is an infant of the age of 18 years, has intermarried with George Edward Graham Foster Pigott, Esquire, without the consent of the trustees of his will. The complaint about Mary Ann Blanche's unapproved marriage seems oddly overblown. Even if she failed to secure legal vouchers in writing from all three executors, she certainly was not marrying against her family's wishes or violating any proprieties. Her January 17th wedding at St. Pancras Church, duly recorded in the parish register and reported in the Times and the Gentleman's Magazine, could not have taken place at all without her mother's permission. The groom, 2 years, 4 years her senior, came from a neighboring family in the terraces around Regent's Park, part of John Nash's grand design. And Captain Butts, as an executor of the will, knew very well that his father had approved of the match. That's because Mary Ann Blanche, whoops. Oh, I see. Well, okay, there we go. It's all of them backwards. I want to go forward. I mean, I want to go back where I was. The codicil. The next one. Thank you. Okay. This brief edition, dated August 31st, 1862, makes a separate bequest of £150 to Captain Butts's one-year-old son, Cecil Aubrey Tilbrook. Apparently the wise father, by inviting his daughter and her fiancé, you look at the handwriting there, who signed it, to act as witnesses, was making sure that all parties concerned were aware that his direct bequest to his grandson was to be removed from the common hotchpot before the residual estate could be divided. There was nothing for Captain Butts to sneer at in his new brother-in-law's profession, which closely mirrored his own. In the summer of 1858, at the age of 18, George had become an ensign, entering service on the lowest rung of the officer's ladder in the 60th or King's Royal Rifle Corps. Unlike Frederick Butts in 1853, though, George didn't have to pay for his entry-level rank. It may have helped that his grandfather, the first to be known by the triple surname, had been a colonel and a member of Parliament. The official rate for ensign was 450 pounds, or more than 26,000 pounds in today's currency, plus a hefty premium for the most prestigious regiments, or for those just returning from overseas assignments. The price for lieutenant was 700 pounds, and then for captain, 1,800, but you just added it incrementally. Captain Butts, who had entered the 77th or Middlesex Regiment of Foot just before the UK entered the Crimean War, had moved up quickly by purchase in 1854, and in 1855, when the upper ranks were thinning, he was promoted to captain without purchase to replace an officer killed in action, and I can't tell you about what all he did at the Siege of Sebastopol. But here he is, if I can make my mouse go to the right place. Those horseback pictures are in Sydney in 1858, and that's where they were stationed before they were called to India to put down a mutiny. So let me see. I can't remember where I was. Perhaps the accelerated pace of major changes in Captain Butts' life in the early 1860s influenced his decision to contest administration of his father's will. In 1860, Frederick had married Eleanor Violet Eliza Stanbridge, a silk draper's daughter, with his sister Blanche signing as one of the two witnesses. In June 1861, when Frederick and his wife were living near his regiment's depot in Gillingham, Kent, their son Cecil Aubrey was born. In May 1862, the captain left the 77th by exchange to serve in the military train, a non-combat battalion. By the time he filed his bill of complaint in April, his home was Aldershot in Hampshire. All that moving may have influenced his decision to spend some of his recent inheritance. On June 24, 1863, a few days after Chancery accepted his case, he signed the deed of conveyance for the Saltons estate on the edge of Parkstone near Poole, Dorset. It's 21 acres, large property. In late summer, at the age of 30, he sold his commission and retired until November 4th of that year, when he became captain in the 4th Company of Dorsetshire Rifle Volunteers, conveniently based in Poole. All right, the next year, Blanche reached, May 21st, 1865, Blanche reached the age of 21, at which point, if not earlier, she was fully entitled to her share. It may be a coincidence, but her mother put the Chester Terrace home up on the market the next month in June. As a military wife with no permanent residence, she may have postponed taking physical possession of all her belongings. In 1864, she and her husband had lived near Birmingham, where their son was born. In 66, her husband purchased the rank of captain, and for the rest of the decade, the Scots Greys that he had joined by then were based in various parts of Ireland. And he too retired from service and moved his family to Cheriton House near Alresford, Hampshire, not far from Winchester. In the 1871 census, as that may be why they were counted as visitors in the home of Blanche's mother, who by then had moved from London to Hove, Sussex. Later that decade, in 1877, Captain Butts reopened the Chancery case. From the outset, his focus had been on the income generating parts of the estate. On March 20th, 1877, his amendment expands the list of defendants to include his 16-year-old son, Cecil Aubrey, and Blanche's children, 14-year-old George Edward, so on, and her 10-year-old Mary. I can't explain the court's decision to appoint Austin Gardner of Ashe near Sandwich, Kent, brewer, as a fit and proper guardian for all three minor children. The Gardner Brewery, still in existence under various names, boasts of having introduced pale ale to East Kent. But the 1877 amendment is mainly concerned with administration of the 1862 codicil, granting a separate inheritance to Cecil Aubrey. Um, Even though the captain was a trustee and executor, he apparently failed to make sure that the legacy was not out of the hotchpot. And so the court issued a judgment that retroactively set up a separate account for Cecil based on what the original 150 pounds would have been if it had been properly invested back at the time. In 1885, 24-year-old Cecil Aubrey died in a boating accident off the Dorset coast. And in 1888, Captain Butts lost his wife, Eleanor. That brings me to another treasure of the Mary Butts papers, genealogical notes in various hands in the family Bible that Captain Butts inherited and then had bound with armorial markings. This page reveals that Eleanor Butts was in Constantinople when she died in March 1888. There are others from another loose sheet and other pages of this, if only I could connect the stories to Blake. The last few entries were inscribed by Captain Butts' second wife, the former Mary Jane Briggs, also of the village of Parkstone. 6 months after Eleanor died, the 55-year-old captain proposed marriage, and immediately after the wedding in 1889, he signed a simple one-page will, leaving everything absolutely to his 25-year-old wife and making her his sole executrix. By 1898, Mary Jane had not only produced two children, but had apparently also taken up her husband's interests in genealogy, collectibles, and yachting parties, as shown here. She even developed something of an enthusiasm for William Blake, which brings us back to the catalog of Blake's pictures at the Salterns. On June 1st, 1898, the Dorset Natural History and Antiquarian Field Club accepted the Butts' long-standing invitation to visit the Salterns to see their unique collection of pictures by Blake. After tea on the lawn, the club's honorable secretary delivered Mary Jane Butts' highly derivative paper on Blake. When the guests entered the Blake room, they saw exactly 34 pictures, precisely the number listed in the little catalog flyer. I can't prove it, but surely the catalog was prepared for this occasion. Mrs. Butts also informed the club that the portion of the Blake collection left to Captain Butts' sister had been, quote, stolen about 20 years ago. Graham Robertson's version, also from Captain Butts, is that she had inherited a total of 17 pictures by Blake, of which only one survived, and the other 16 were stored in an attic and lost or destroyed. If they went missing about 1878, that was after the Graham Foster Picketts had put down roots at Cheriton House, where the retired Captain Pickett had become a pillar of the community of 642 souls, serving on the school board and helping support a schoolhouse for 80 poor children. In 1890, he was nationally profiled in Bailey's Magazine of Sports and Pastimes as a cheery enthusiast of the hunt and a backer of racehorses. Son George followed his father's footsteps to Eton and then into the military. Daughter Mary, at 22, married the vicar of a neighboring parish, 10 years her senior, and settled near her parents. Cheriton House is now preserved as a British listed building. So is this the attic in which Blake's pictures may have perished? Indeed, prompted by Blanche's loss, concern for conservation may be the principle behind the captain's choice of only some of Blake's pictures for exhibit. Presuming that the 1898 catalog is numbered in the order in which the pictures, a viewer would have encountered the pictures, the sequence seems odd, with number 22 separated from 28 and 27 from 32. They should go together. Perhaps light exposure or other conditions influenced the arrangement. The purpose-built room contained 25 watercolors and 9 color prints, but nothing at all in tempera, Blake's most unstable medium. Also unexhibited was one watercolor, the Hymn of Christ and His Apostles, perhaps because of its rather pale coloring. By my count, slightly different from Fiscomi's, but Captain Butts owned at least 9 color prints, 10 tempers, and 26 watercolors, making a total of 45 pictures sold either by the captain or his widow. Of these in the Blake Room, the captain offered 13, mostly in the left column, in his 19-3 auction, 12 watercolors and 1 color print. Later, he sold Graham Robertson 1 watercolor that had been bought in and 2 never previously offered. So works the captain prized and apparently had intended to keep in the family are the 18 pictures in the Blake Room that he never sold or attempted to sell. Finally, to the last chancery amendment. Because of changes in the way documents are stored, I can have only this catalog entry for now. Apparently, must have been because Captain Butts had died. I don't understand the realignment of plaintiffs and defendants in the growing cast of characters. Is this George Edward Graham Foster Pickett Blanche's husband or her son by the same name? Why does Agnes Everildis Briggs, the youngest of Mary Jane Butts' maiden aunts, have any standing in this case? The last name on the list, Mary Frances Butts, is an error for Mary Frannies, the odd middle name of Mary Butts the novelist. She, of course, was the captain's daughter, not his widow, who is Mary Jane, also on that list. Baffled as I am, I'll close with a bit of gossip. I can't explain it anymore. Blanche's daughter, now Mary Graham Foster Cruikshank, should have counted herself lucky to be on this list at all. For in 1898, she ran away with a butler to Toronto. And her husband, the Reverend Herbert Ogden Cruikshank, was granted a legal separation and custody of their children. By the time of the 1901 census, all was forgiven, and Mary was back at home with a reverend with whom she remained until her death in 1907. She died in 1907. Her mother, Blanche, and father, George, survived her, but apparently not as a couple. As early as 1895, a directory of Alsford lists only Blanche in the Cheriton house. By 1918, she was living alone in Hove, Sussex, where her mother had settled, though not at her mother's former address. On December 26, 1923, her estranged husband, then of 4 Pembridge Crescent in London, died, leaving an estate of more than £40,000, with his son and namesake appointed executor. A few months later, on February 2, 1927, Blanche herself died in Hove, Sussex, leaving an estate of just over £7,000. With her son, again, and her grandson, the son of her deceased daughter, as co-executors. Why do I know all this stuff? All I ever wanted to do was to study the biblical watercolors. But I dutifully tried to get my facts straight first. So I'm warning you, unless you can command Jerry Bentley's masterly analytical skills, wit, and grace in working with facts, stay away from those archives on the internet.